presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Stephanie Orem from Emmanuel College in Boston in the United States.
And I'm Brian McCauley here at the Media Management and Transformation Center in Sweden, in Jönköping, the city of DreamHack. Our guest today is an associate professor at St. John's University in New York. Welcome, David Hedlund. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for having me. Yep. My name is David Hedlund. I'm an associate professor here at St. John's University in New York. I'm the chairperson of the Division of Sport Management, and I'm also the director of the Interdisciplinary Institute of Research.
Cool. Thanks for joining us, David. We're happy to have you here today.
Happy to be
here. So we always like to start off on our show about asking people, what is your definition of esports?
Yeah, so we've been having this debate online and face-to-face for quite a while. The way that I would understand esports today, number one, it's between two or more people. So because of the internet technology and connectivity, we're able to now connect through the internet, through LAN networks, things of this sort. So esports is connecting of two or more people together to then hold a competition in an esport game. Now, in the past, there were opportunities to kind of put like units side by side, some of the initial Atari competitions. Today, using iPhones and iPads and different kinds of technology to put people side by side. But it is a competition between competitors. And so I think this is really one of the most important basis of how you define esports.
So actually, yeah. I have a follow-up. Oh, go ahead.
Nope.
I was going to say, I have a follow-up to that, which is, you emphasize two or more people. So where would you categorize something like speedrunning? Would speedrunning be considered esports?
Ooh.
You know, where people are trying to beat their own record or set a time record or something like that.
Yeah. So there, when video games first came out in the 1970s, 1980s, they had the high score options. And so many people, they would go and they would compete with each other using those high score options, or in the case of speedrunning, trying to get through the course, get through the game as quickly as possible. Certainly, I would believe if there are, moving on to other aspects of a potential definition, standardized rules, kind of organized, everyone's playing in the same type of way, everyone's understanding what they're supposed to be doing with set goals, things of this sort. I think all of this could be also be considered esports. But of course, we get into this debate about is there gaming, which one is which? And I think generally speaking today, we understand that all esports are video games, but not all video games are esports. And that competition between two or more people, I believe it could be done through the high score lists or through keeping track of speed running scores, things of this sort. But today, I think many people better understand that it's when you have two people directly competing in real time against one another.
I mean, it's like football. You don't have the world championships of keep the football up by one person with stadiums full, but it's, you know, still a kind of sport. So yeah, I think you're kind of right. And I think we're never going to have 15,000 people, cheering on a speed running competition unless something really terrible happens in the world, worse than what's happened. So David, we're here today. The title above you says Esports Business Management, and that is apparently a first of its kind textbook. So what is it and how did it happen?
Yeah, so over the last year and a half, myself, Gil Fried from the University of New Haven, R.C. Rick Smith III from Marietta College, we got together brainstorming about, we're teaching courses in esports, but there really aren't materials that are available. And Gil is an accomplished author, and so he said, well, let's write a textbook. And so it started right there, and then we started to bring people together. So each one of us, we have networks of esports professionals, esports academics, esports researchers, people who work in the esports industry. And we started bringing all of these people together and saying, hey, we're going to put together the first of its kind textbook, resource, educational materials on esports. Would you like to contribute? You know, whether it's, you know, writing part of a chapter, writing a case study, something like this. And by and large, people were like, yeah, this is a great idea. You know, I cobbled together materials from websites and things like this. It'd be great if we had something that was a little bit more standardized that we could use, that was kind of all there and all in. And so over the last year and a half, myself, Gil, Rick, and 44 other people put together this brand new first of its kind textbook, Esports Business Management. So that's a little bit about kind of how it came to be and a little bit about the book.
I mean, Swift, did you get an invite to contribute to this book?
No.
These must be fantastic people. We're not worthy, I suppose, huh?
No, but I was going to say, it's, you know, as someone who has taught esports courses and is familiar with the culture of esports curriculum that are popping up all over the United States right now, right? This is like a really hot thing. It has up until this point been the efforts of individual instructors coming together, like you said, David, on our own, cobbling together whatever resources we can find online, you know, personal experiences, personal research, and putting together a syllabus based on that. So I think what you're doing and bringing people together and creating a major resource for people is doing a huge service to the academic community, and hopefully too bringing some uniformity to kind of how esports management is taught across curriculum.
Well, it's and thank you for all of those comments. I mean, that reinforces, I think, what Gil and Rick and I and the publisher thought. But even beyond that, I mean, when you look at some of the research coming out of Hitmark, when it compared, Hitmarker compared the 2018 jobs to 2019 jobs. And you know what, 88% increase between those 2 years in terms of how many people are getting jobs. All those people who are getting hired, do they understand esports? Do they understand some of the nuances of esports? Do they understand that the gaming industry is $150 to $200 billion, while the esports industry, Newzoo would say it's $1 billion, although some research that was just published in the International Journal of Esports believes it's more in the neighborhood of $25 billion. Do people understand some of these nuances? And in fact, I've heard just recently people comparing, yeah, you know, 110 million people watched the NFL American Football Super Bowl, and, you know, 110 million people watched the League of Legends World Championships. You know, and some of these kind of comparisons, which are not always great comparisons to be making. And so there's a lot of nuances, even when we get into topics of law and governance and marketing. There are so many unique things that are happening in esports, and we know they're unique because other industries are borrowing them from the esports industry. You know, bringing all of these things together and providing a guide for industry. You know, just starting to lay out some information. You know, we call this as well, not just the textbook, but a resource guide, you know, because we're trying to put a lot of knowledge, a lot of understanding all together, and to try to start getting everything with a little bit of uniformity where people can make these kind of fine distinctions that previously maybe they just kind of glossed over and inappropriately compared, you know, the viewership of the Super Bowl to viewership in all of esports, something like this.
So the Super Bowl, let's be honest, there's at least, what, 30% watch it for the commercials and another 30% watch it because they're at a family thing or, and they have to. So, you know, League of Legends is winning in that one.
Well, in this case, you know, I'll go back to my kind of consumer behavior and marketing background. In that case, probably that depends on who's playing in the Super Bowl. It's actually fairly well known, I believe, in the United States that when you've got teams from big metropolitan areas, more people are going to be watching for the game because of concepts such as team identification and loyalty to your team, loyalty to your players. Not forgetting, of course, that fantasy sports has kind of screwed this up because we may have players on our fantasy sports teams that are from rival teams, but that's a separate thing we could talk about in another esports report. But in this case, there's just a lot of confusion about esports in general, how we are comparing things. And so for consumers and fans, for people who are working in industry, for students who want to enter the industry. We tried the best we could with this first attempt at putting all of these materials together to try to help get people onto the same page. But certainly, we're very much looking forward to all the debates that are going to arise from many of the topics included in this book.
Okay, what's one of the debates that you see is going to come up?
So one of my favorite debates is related to esports law. Now, Gil Fried, who is the one of the other editors of this textbook, he's written extensively on this, wrote textbooks on law. He wrote the chapter on this with one of his colleagues, Jason Chung, and then Graciano Gaillard. So these three, they brought together a lot of their knowledge and expertise, and one of the big issues is related to intellectual property. Who owns the games, competitions, things of this sort? This is one of the biggest differences between sports and esports. The fact that in sports, I don't need to go to Nike or Adidas or Spalding or any of these type of goods manufacturers if I want to play a game of soccer or basketball or baseball or something like this. But depending on the policies of each individual game developer, we likely need to go to them to be approved in order to hold competitions in League of Legends or Rocket League or Smash Brothers or any of these other competitions that might occur. And so there's a lot of, I think, misunderstandings, but a lot of really interesting discussions because, okay, if we need to go to these game developers to get their permission, what role should these game developers have in many aspects? One of the keys, governance. The people who create the game, develop the game, publish the game, do we also want them managing the game, coming up with the rules for the game, overseeing the game? Might they take more of a business perspective on, hey, if we support this group, maybe more money, more users will come in? And so there's a lot of really interesting questions that, albeit this young esports industry is facing. So this is one of my favorite topics to discuss, even though I'm very basic in kind of some of my understandings of it.
It's such a fascinating topic, and we've seen a couple high-profile cases, at least here in the U.S. recently, of, I know, collegiate programs that weren't going to even attempt to hold league tournaments because of issues with Riot over this exact thing, right?
Yeah, so St. John's University, for the Americans who might be watching, and I'll try to explain it in a more general sense so that, you know, anyone could. My university belongs to a collegiate conference called the Big East. It's a fairly well-known, predominantly known for its basketball competitions. And so they've partnered with a group, the Electronic Gaming Federation, EGF. And then EGF, they go out and they get permission from the publishers then to hold competitions. So currently this fall, I believe we're competing in 5 different games. But we have hundreds of other students who want to compete in Counter-Strike, in Fortnite, in Valorant, in a lot of different kinds of games. And so it's a very interesting situation with, okay, you've got these kind of competitions, but then what about all these other players? How can we help these players? How can we support? So because esports still at the collegiate level is very much in its infancy, there really are not a whole lot of great answers here, but certainly the philosophy that I myself and others around collegiate esports, I think, have been, let's just try to get opportunities for everyone. Let's try to connect them together. And then if they've bought the games via Steam or whatever, or downloaded them, or the business model is, you don't need to pay in order to buy the game. You're buying loot boxes and items and things like that. Then let's just connect people together. Let's just find people, especially right now in COVID-19, let's find a couple of people who like Fortnite, a couple of people who like Valorant, a couple of people who want to speed run in different kinds of games. Let's find these people, let's connect them together. And then, you know, as the industry develops, as we figure out all these legal aspects, then we'll see what we can do.
David, you've got a copy of the book there.
I do.
Is it a potential weapon? How big is it? could you use it to defend yourself? How many pages are there? Could you get in trouble throwing it at a student?
So this is a very interesting thing. I'm going to hold it up sideways so that everyone can see. It is not the typical thickness of a textbook. Most textbooks are probably Let's see. American, that's what, about 2 to 3 inches? So what's that going to be, like 20, 25 centimeters? No, that's probably too much.
No, no, David, don't. We're not going to ask you, you're American. We're not going to ask you about centimeters. Look, I mean, look, how many pages are in there? Because I've had issues where I get textbooks, marketing textbooks, and I've got in here in Jönköping, we have two subjects over like a 6-week semester. So I know in Australia, maybe America, you do the kind of 4 subjects over 12 weeks. We have this different system here, and I actually quite like it. I think I'm actually coming around to it's better. But at the same time, when I say, here's the marketing textbook, and it's 400 pages, and I go, well, you're going to have to do this and your assignment and come to lectures and, you know, try to understand all this. I feel really guilty, and I go, but we won't be doing this chapter, this chapter, this chapter, this chapter. So, you know, that's always an issue for me, that when they buy a book, that, you know, you want them to be able to use it, but then you don't have time and you don't want to put it on them. So with your book, how does that sort of work?
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time figuring this out. And it's one reason why we worked with the Human Kinetics Publishers, you know, because they have so much experience with this. To answer your first question, the book officially, excluding front cover, back cover, 252 pages. The marketing chapter that I co-wrote with Dan Liang, I think it's probably only about 15 pages at most. The book itself contains 14 chapters. But interestingly, and, you know, declaration of interest, there is an afterword as well. The afterword was written by Tobias Schultz from the Esports Research Network. He had originally contributed this to a chapter, but we thought it was such good content, we actually created its own chapter, if you will, noting it as the afterword. So Tobias has his own chapter in this book. So officially it's 14 chapters with this extra. Now, taking that into consideration, in the United States, a standard, if you're doing it the way most universities do on a semester system, most semesters are 16 weeks long. And so with 14 chapters, you can do one chapter a week with a midterm and a final, and it works out perfectly. And so we thought about this when we designed the textbook, and we even combined a couple of topics together into chapters in order to kind of make this work. At the same point in time, because so many people contributed, we couldn't put all of this into the textbook. And so, again, one of the great things about the publisher is they have an online platform, Human Kinetics Propel, HK Propel. And so there is a companion set of materials on the Propel website. And so each chapter has at least 2 different additional pieces of writing and activities. And so many of these are case studies, profiles, additional pieces of information. And so, you know, the way that we've talked about it when people have asked me the same kind of question, Brian, is, okay, so because this is the first textbook, we want to use this at the undergraduate and graduate level. What happens when students have read both, used it at both? And of course, at this point, a lot of those online materials could be used at the graduate level because a lot of them are there to create that same type of discussion that Steph was kind of posing to me about, you know, what's the interesting issue? Talk to us a little bit about this law and IP. Where a lot of the materials that were created were specifically created to represent these type of issues and to get people talking. Because esports is an industry, video gaming, for all of the positive, great things that it does, there's a lot of people who also discuss, hey, there are negative things. You know, what about addiction? What about the sedentary nature? All of these types of things. And so there's a lot of great discussions that can be had about this. And so even there, we thought of this with including these sidebars within the book of, you know, just someone doing a profile or writing about a topic they think is important, discussion questions, all sorts of things. You know, so we really did our best to try to make this something for everyone and even to be able to have multiple uses where it's not just this book is, you know, for one class that it could be used for multiple classes. The other thing, and I know I talk a lot, the sustainability piece. In fact, these print textbooks are very limited. And I don't say that because I'm trying to drive sales. I say that because one of the key things that we thought about was, you know, this is, you know, we're talking about a digital industry. Shouldn't the book basically be digital? And so primarily we're hoping the book is distributed digitally through the publisher and then digitally through services like Amazon. And so there's a very limited print run on the books because, again, we wanted this to be digital.
I mean, that's awesome. I've obviously been approached here to design an esports course. And one of the first things, and we're a school of entrepreneurship and business, and I'm going, oh, crap, where do I start? How do I do? So, you know, I actually thought your book, you were going to go, bang, you could kill someone with this. And I was going to go, oh, no, it's going to be too big. But I actually really like the sound of the size of it and you know, that sort of things. Because I have a big fear of teaching esports, because teaching esports and even the business of esports is like coming and saying to an international student body, and you're going, I'm going to teach you all of sports. Now, in America, you'd have your American sports you could focus on. In Ireland, you could talk about the Irish sports like hurling and Gaelic football. And you'd have Sweden to be hockey and football. You know, that sort of way. Soccer, as you guys call it. Football, as it should be known. And the thing is, that's easy. But with esports, we know a lot of different things about esports. And I still, as I admit, I know very little about so much of it. And I literally don't have enough time in the day to learn that stuff. And then suddenly you're teaching a 19-year-old who's been at his gaming PC since he could climb up in his dad's chair at 6, and he's, you know, he knows everything, and he's 19, and he's a gold ninja eagle master at some sport like CSGO or Valorant or whatever they are. He's a bunny at League of Legends, whatever it is. You have to deal with these kids who think they know everything. And you're going, that's great, that's great. I get your point. I don't know who that random streamer from Iceland is, but I'm sure it's very important. So I like the idea of the book as a kind of base to maybe negate those very enthusiastic, difficult students you might have. Would you agree that, you know, it's a good foundation to give us a platform to do our own things as lecturers?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's two things I think specifically, just because I know we can't talk all day, that I'd respond to that. Number one is many of these zoning pieces that we put in the textbook, these are stories from people first person talking about things they've seen, things they've done, pieces of information like this. You're not going to get that unless you actually interact with these people. So there's a lot of stories. One of the most interesting things about esports and gaming is there is a narrative. This is how games are designed. You know, you're on a trek, you're on a quest, on a path. You're trying to accomplish some goal. And so within the textbook, there is some of this. The second thing I think that's really interesting about what you were describing, Brian, is when you look at education, what happens, in particularly at higher education, whether it's psychology, sociology, history, whatever, usually there is an introductory course. And in that introductory course, they kind of lay out, here's everything. In my division here at St. John's Sport Management, our first class is Principles and Practices of Sport Management. We use textbooks that introduce all of the different aspects, or many of the most popular aspects of sport management. And so the faculty spend their time that first semester introducing these things. And much of the reason is to try to help students understand, okay, hey, I'm an outgoing person. Yeah, maybe I think marketing might be good for me. Or, you know what, I like math and stats, so maybe I'm going to go more in the analytics route, something like this. When we first started building this textbook, these were some of the principles that went into how we constructed it, where this book is initially designed to be that introductory level, to introduce a lot of these different pieces of information. Where, you know, I see a lot of people online, do I need to major in esports to work in esports? No, I mean, there are so many opportunities in esports. You know, if you're good at playing music, maybe you could do something, you know, with audio and sound. You know, if you're good at drawing, graphic design, I mean, there's so many opportunities. And so we've tried to at least lay out some of these things. One of the interesting things when people who are going to use the textbook, I've even said, look, if you don't have a textbook and you want to do a course, you know, let's say Jönköping is going to have a course on esports events and venues. You know, you could use this textbook again, just the chapter that's focused on this, as kind of that first reading. Let's just review this. Let's use this as a jumping off point. And then we'll start with the base questions there. And then I'll be pulling together information from other resources. And so we've really been very deliberate in how we've built this. But again, to try to leave as much opportunity, because so much of the fun of teaching esports and talking about esports is what we are doing right here. You know, discussing it and debating it and really digging into it. It's almost like our personal esports quest, you know, where we are seeking, let's call it esports truth, and that this is just one step on our path towards getting that. So, you know, I guess you're the bunny, and then I'm what, eagle now, in terms of esports truth, something like this? Or is that reversed?
Bunny's a higher rank. I'm the bunny. It's my ranking system. I made it up, so I win. So you're a happy eagle, and I'm a fantastic bunny. Steph, we got any last questions for David, the grand eagle master of esports, crappy as that title is.
Well, I was going to ask you, David, what do you think other researchers should be looking into? What do you want to see researchers explore next?
So I apologize. This is going to be a little bit of self-promotional. In Chapter 13, there is a case study that I wrote with several of my colleagues from the New York Institute of Technology and an industry partner about health and wellness. And so this was some research that we had tried to present at some conferences. And, you know, a lot of people had responded with, oh, this is about esports. Esports isn't a sport. So yeah, it doesn't belong at a sport conference. And so we ended up just taking some of the really interesting pieces and putting it together in a case study. And so there is a little bit of research that's published in this book as well. This leads to a lot of very interesting discussions that people can research. You know, the International Journal of Esports and some of the other journals that are coming out, I think there are plenty of opportunities to look at health and wellness. This is one of the biggest concerns I think that people have today, especially parents. I want to know if my little Jane or little John, if they're playing, you know, 3-4 hours of Fortnite a day, should I be concerned? Is this something I need to worry about their physical, their mental, their eyes, their hands and wrists and back and neck and some of these type of things? Is this something I need to worry about? But there's a lot of other areas I think we can look at. So I notice behind Steph, there's a picture of the Boston Uprising. I myself have had the opportunity here in New York to work with people over at Andbox. Now it's the New York Excelsior. The CSGO team, it's slipping my mind right off the top of my head. The Subliners, excuse me. And working with my students, doing some research for them, trying to understand, okay, what do consumers think about some of these teams? Do they recognize some of these teams? I mean, one of the most interesting findings, after the Subliners team was first announced in January, we did some research on the kind of the brand equity. How well known are New York Excelsior and the Subliners? And even though the Subliners were literally brand new as of January, more people knew about them. And we believe a lot of that was due to the fact that CSGO is more well known, or Call of Duty is more well known than Overwatch. And so it was really interesting to us to look into some of these topics. And of course, today I think more and more people are playing games, more and more people are engaged in esports and competitions. More people are thinking about, hey, can I set up a tournament with a couple of my friends? You know, where do I go to do this? How do I stream? All of these type of things. I mean, there's so many unique things happening in esports, which I think would be great research topics. And so for colleges and universities, find your local esports groups. Find out what they want to know. Work with them. Lots of opportunities out there in esports, I think.
That's, you're actually pretty much giving what I'd say in the same question there about that. Thank you very much, David. All the links are below the video or below this audio podcast whenever I get around to launching it as an audio podcast. So if you want to find out more about esports business management or contact David, look at the links below. Thank you very much, David, for all your insights today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Stop the action, stop the